It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour by talking about adding some height to our gardens. Linda Knave is here. She is Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. How are you, Charity?
Very good. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Richard and I were just saying I haven't been on for quite a while.
Right. It has been a while. And of course, Richard Giron is also here with Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Linda, I know you want to talk about vertical gardening today. So give us a sort of a brief definition of what that is.
Well, vertical gardening is when you're using your air space above the garden rather than the crawl space along the garden. So what you're doing is you're taking your plants and growing them more upright. And some plants respond to this very well, and they actually do better when they're growing more upright. And what I mean by doing better is, let's take a tomato, for example. If you just allow it to sprawl along the ground, regardless of whether it's a determinate, shorter growing one, or an indeterminate, what happens is the fruit sits on the ground, the foliage sits on the ground, and it's more apt to acquire plant foliage diseases because it's in contact with the moist soil. The fruit tend to sit on the wet soil if it's wet and rot. And so by growing it upright in a cage or on a stake or through other means, you keep the foliage off the ground. You allow better air movement through the plant, so that discourages the buildup of foliage diseases. And the fruit quality is much better. It's shown that if you cage it versus allow it to grow on the ground, you have much higher quality fruit production from that plant.
Now, I think that particularly with tomatoes and beans and peas, a lot of us are already doing this to some extent. Are there some plants in the garden that we commonly grow but don't necessarily think about staking or putting on a trellis or putting in a cage that can really benefit from that?
Well, one that we don't often think about is the bell pepper. And we don't have cages for bell peppers, although I think the tomato cages, the little circular ones that you see that are sort of a cone shape, that are inverted cone, they work better for peppers because pepper fruit gets extremely heavy, and so does eggplant. And if you're having a good production on your pepper plant and a strong wind comes along, those stems are brittle and they could break off. But by having some type of a support around your pepper or your eggplant, it doesn't just strengthen the stem, but it supports it so that a strong wind or the heavy fruit load doesn't snap the stems.
So with the cages, obviously we call them tomato cages, so that's a primary use for them. But a lot of people use other things to hold up their tomatoes as well. Do you have any suggestions for things that might work even better than cages for tomatoes?
I prefer a staking method, and it's called... It's used by commercial tomato producers that grow the determinate type, shorter growing varieties. It's called a Florida weave. And the materials you need for the Florida weave have some advantages. One is, if you have cages and let's say you are growing 15 to 20 tomato plants out in your garden, there you've got to store those. And plus you have to have some type of a strong stake to support that cage to keep it from blowing over. So not only are you investing in the caging materials and the stakes, but you have to have a place to store them. And in many urban environments, there just isn't a place like that out of sight during the winter months. So going back to the Florida weave is a system in which you can use wooden stakes, like 2x2 wooden stakes, 1x1 wooden stakes, strong wooden stakes that are perhaps 3 to 4 feet tall that you pound in the ground. And they go, let's say you're planting your tomatoes 2.5 to 3 feet apart. They go every 2 tomato plants. So you have a stake, 2 tomato plants, a stake, 2 tomato plants. Then you use twine. You can use baler's twine. I'll get a big bale of baler's twine, and you start and you weave it around your plants. Now, some people will weave in and out of each plant. Others will go from stake to stake to stake and then back on the other side. So your tomato plant is held up between these two strings.
So
at various layers.
Would you do it right when you plant, or do you let the plant grow a little bit and then go out and do this?
That's a good question, Charity. What you would do is you'd put the stakes in right away. Then when the plants get to be maybe about, a foot tall, or the point where they start to want to flop over, then you go in and you stake, you do one line around both sides of the stake, okay, to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the plant starts to grow a little taller, maybe 6 to 8 inches above that, you can go with another line. So you're doing your strings in layers.
Okay. Now, that sounds like a method that, as you said, it's easy to store because you just have a pile of stakes and you can start mm-hmm. with fresh twine every year and there's not a lot of waste. And a lot of people are installing sort of structures in their gardens. They'll either put up one of those cattle panels or something mm-hmm. like that, which is a nice firm fence-like object that you can stake to. And people are even building archways or trellises out of those. How do you feel about the more permanent structures that some people are trying out?
I've seen the cattle panels work, and they work well. But there again, you have the panels to store later and an investment in those, and you have the steel stakes to hold them up. I've seen two cattle panels used around plants, one on each side, and so that they're narrow, close together on the bottom near the ground, at the ground level, and then they sort of go out so it accommodates a bushier plant as the plant grows. Does that make sense?
Right. So it's almost like a giant tomato cage.
It is. It is.
Long,
and I've
rectangular
seen
one.
Those work extremely well. You do have to go out occasionally and force these stems. They want to get out of those cages, so you've got to push them back in, just kind of force them back in as they start to go back out, and that shouldn't be a problem unless they get too long and too large that they snap. But if you're just kind of diligent about watching any stems or shoots that come out of the cage and put it back in, I think you're doing well. And when you're selecting the kind of material you're going to use, those cattle panels or hog panels or fencing materials, just be sure that you have a material that you can reach your hand through and grab a tomato and bring it back through. I've seen cases where they use whatever is available and the openings aren't large enough to allow harvest. That creates a problem.
Right. Well, and I can imagine some people getting so excited about vertical gardening that they're gardening well above their own heads and then have a hard time reaching things to harvest.
Yeah, that could possibly be a problem too, but not too often. Except
right.
Maybe if you have pole beans or something like that that grows extremely tall.
With some of the archways that you see people installing in gardens, I wonder about how that limits your rotation possibilities. It seems like that really limits the number of different kinds of plants you can plant in one place. And of course, you want to move things around your garden every year.
That's a good point. You know, if you have a permanent structure there and you're growing vegetable crops, rotation is really important, and that permanent structure does inhibit the opportunity to move things unless you can put different things on that structure. For example, you can tie tomatoes to it 1 year, or the next year you could grow cucumbers on it, or gourds or something like that. So you're just mixing up the plant families. The next year maybe you're going with green pole beans on that structure. That would be the way to go with that.
One of the kinds of plants that I was reading about and looking at vertical gardening that kind of surprised me was a suggestion that you can actually grow melons, some kinds of melons, more vertically. Is that something you've looked into?
I've never done that, but I have seen it done. The most that I've ever grown a cucurbit upright would be a cucumber. And the melons are heavy.
Mm-hmm.
They're weighted. And if they're going... imagine them going over part of the trellis, then dangling down is what they're going to do. It puts a lot of strain on that stem. And so people who grow, let's say, cantaloupes or muskmelon, let's say yellow doll watermelon that are probably 5 to 10 pounds, you need to form some type of a little bag or a hanging hammock for that fruit because it will choke the stem.
Now, something that if you type green walls into a search engine or Pinterest or something like that, it kind of blows up. So many people are excited about the idea of planting things vertically on walls for the aesthetic appeal, but also, of course, to increase their gardening space. Is that something you've experimented with at all?
Just very briefly, and not to any great extent. a lot of times they're using them for ornamentals or for mm-hmm. strawberries. The key to that is to have some type of internal irrigation system with that allows moisture to go a drip line or something all the way to the bottom of that structure so that you have good moisture movement through it. So if you water on top or even water in the openings, you're not going to get enough moisture near the bottom of that structure.
All right. And when I say green walls, we're talking about people who are putting up different kinds of containers, fastening them to a wall mm-hmm. and planting in those containers. And there are so many different varieties of containers that people are using. And I know that a lot of these are meant to be aesthetic and they look awesome when the plants are growing. Sometimes I wonder about what they look like during the winter months. Some of the weirder ones, like people are growing small plants in old Crocs, for example, and fastening those to the wall. And I think, and then it's just a wall full of old shoes in the wintertime. But people are getting really, really creative with those.
They are. It's kind of fun. I guess it depends on your garden style. If you like that kind of thing in your garden, it's really pretty much up to the imagination. But you've got to think of the mechanics. When you're growing plants in containers, such as an old boot or whatever they're using, old crock, there are a few things you need to consider. One is the container itself needs to be sturdy enough to support the plant growth, large enough to support the plant's root system, and provide some means of drainage. And if whatever you're growing them in doesn't allow any of those three things, you're not going to be very successful.
All right. So you have to alter your old mm-hmm. boot if you're going to
That's right. You're going to have to create new holes if they're not already there.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. With me is Linda Nave. She is Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program. Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension, is also here. And they are here, of course, to answer your questions. So if you have questions about vertical gardening or any type of gardening or the plants in your landscape, give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Linda Nave. They are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start with an email question from Dawn. Like everyone else in Iowa this year, my evergreen-type plants have lots of burned patches. Mm-hmm. I've pruned most of the bad branches and leaves off, but it seems like the dead areas of some of my plants, especially the boxwood, just keep growing and expanding. Is it possible that if you don't take off all the burned and dead branches, that the leaves will move further down into the plant?
No, not really. But at this point, the full extent of the damage may not be known. I would wait probably another week or two, early June, before doing any more pruning. And then at that point, prune out any dead wood. All trees and shrubs that are alive right now are producing new growth. And so if you don't see new growth by early June on certain branches, they must be dead. So the boxwoods took a really big hit this past winter. They did. Some plants may be beyond salvage. Some may be totally dead, unfortunately. So.
All right. Well, I'm sure we're not done talking about this problem.
Probably not, no.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Don is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I have two separate questions. First has to do with both related to winter, well, to the winter. But anyway, ivy. I have some ivy that's on the ground and on a wall. It's on the sheltered northwest side of the house, and it's been there for 20-some years. Always comes out healthy. This year, initially, it looked like it was all dead, but there is some green growth. My question is, how long should I wait, and what should I trim and when?
Yeah, again, I'd probably wait another week or two and then prune out what's not leafing out. So I would prune back to where you have some nice new green sprouts or leaves.
Okay. But it looks like that might be 90% of the plant.
That could be, but at least if it's still alive, it can recover.
Okay.
Quite a few plants suffered winter injury this past year or so.
Okay. And then I have a second question about ever-blooming hydrangea. I believe they're the ones that they say they bloom on old growth, and this sort of looks like last year, but the canes have been cut back, especially the newer canes were cut back to 20 to 30 inches early this spring.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of the growth is coming from the base. Mm-hmm. I don't see any growth at all on the canes.
Right.
Directly.
Right. So that's probably one of the big leaf hydrangeas, and they're kind of marginally hardy. The nice thing about those is they bloom on the previous year's growth, but also the new growth, many of the newer ones. So if they die back to the ground, they'll still bloom, hopefully in late summer, but you'll lose that early summer bloom. So again, I'd probably wait another week or so and then prune out everything that appears to be dead.
And this was the ever-blooming, you know, that
Yeah. So you may get bloom yet this year, but it's going to be late summer before that new growth can form flower buds and bloom.
All right, Don, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Dennis in Boone. Hi, Dennis.
Morning. Yeah, my question is, what are some vegetable crops that deer will not eat? Potatoes?
Well,
potato.
I always typically say that there is no such thing as a deer-proof plant, that if you have a large population, if food is scarce, they'll essentially eat almost anything. That's kind of my proposition as far as what I think. There are some things they probably tend to ignore in most cases, but I don't think there's anything that's actually deer-proof.
I agree. And the variety, you know, you have different animals with different tastes, and so you're going to run into a lot of problems there.
But aren't the potato plants poisonous, though? I mean, would they...
Well, they can be to humans, but that may not be the case for deer. So you have plants that might be poisonous to humans, but sometimes other animals can eat them and they're not affected. So it kind of depends. So I would not eat a tomato plant, but I think an animal like a deer could and not be affected.
All right. So Dennis may need to focus on fence building techniques.
I think so.
Okay.
Right. And one way is, as far as deer, you can use like an electric fence. And they have these ribbon-type strands that you can use. And if you place that about 2.5 to 3 feet off the ground, it actually does a pretty good job. And sometimes they bait those with, like, peanut butter to encourage the deer to come up to it. And then they find out exactly what that is very quickly.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for your call. Here's an email question from Lisa. I have trellises on the edge of our patio, which is on the east side of the house. In containers next to the trellises, I've planted clematis. What other plants would be good for this trellis?
You could put some annual things there, possibly, like scarlet runner beans would be fine.
Cardinal vine
would be another possibility.
Black-eyed Susan vine.
So a number of possibilities. Woody plants,
China berry, whether it would make it through the winter. Porcelain berry.
All right.
So those are the possibilities.
All right, let's go back to the phone, and Dale's on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Dale.
Hello. My question is that I'm going to plant several arborvitae and then ring that arborvitae with the gold twig and red twig dogwood. But I started to think, gosh, I'm going to be doing a lot of watering with all these new plants. And one of my downspouts runs right by this area, and I thought, well, I can just divert the downspout. And when it does rain, I'm going to, drench this area, and that'll cut down on my watering. Is my idea all wet?
Well, you might get some benefit, but make sure they have enough space to grow. Some of these plants, like the dogwoods, can get to be 8 foot tall and 8 foot wide. So make sure they have enough space. So that downspout may help, but I think you're going to need to irrigate quite a bit too when it's dry, because when it's not raining, you're not getting any water from the downspout. So,
will the arborvitae and the dogwoods tolerate the same amount of water? They're not incompatible in the same area, are they?
Well, I would say that the red twig dogwood would tolerate the wet soils much better than the arborvitae. The arborvitae like a consistently moist soil. They don't like a constantly wet soil. But the red twig dogwood actually does quite well in moist to wet soil. So they would tolerate the wet conditions much better than arborvitae.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. Marty is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Marty.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about tree peonies. And I need to thank you folks for telling me last year when they were looking so poorly to wait till this spring to cut off the dead, which I did. Excuse me. Now, this year, and last year, I let them go to seed. I had a lot of seed, and they grew. The seeds grew. Will they be true? Will they come true?
I would guess not entirely, no. I would guess there would be some genetic diversity there, so they would not be exact copies. They might be very similar, but not exact copies.
Okay, but they'll probably be pretty?
they should be, I would think, yes.
All right. So, Marty, does that answer your question?
Yes, again, thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Dennis is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, hi, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I'm like the other Dennis. I've got fencing around everything, but it sure pays off. And it looks like I'm growing tomato cages now because I do use a lot of them, and I'm using a hawk panel to grow my squash, my cucumbers, and melons, but I only use one hog panel, so I might have a little trouble with that later on down the road. But my question is for Richard about spacing of cucumbers. You know, when you go to the store and you buy the plants and you get maybe six in there, and I just split them up and put three in a batch, am I supposed to split those up into individuals or just leave them together?
Well, some people plant them in hills. I prefer the hill method. Where you have maybe two or three plants in a hill, okay, and then you may...
Is it okay to have them together or separate them?
Oh, they can be right next to each other.
Okay.
Within a few inches. And then you might have maybe 4 feet and then another hill of plants, two or three plants. I typically plant seed, so I'll plant maybe 4 or 5 seeds in a hill, and then if they all come up, I remove all but two or three plants. Some people do plant just a single plant, where you might have a single plant, and then maybe 2 feet, another single plant, and then another 2 feet. So it can be a single plant or it can be a hill.
So I may have to space them a little bit because they're all growing right out of the same spot.
Okay. If you need to, you can space them.
I just put them in, so there's plenty of time.
Okay.
Another question. Does a radish, if you put radish seeds in your in your cucumber hills, does that help with disease?
Not that I'm aware.
Not that I'm aware.
No.
I heard that. I guess it's an old wives' tale.
All right, bummer. Thanks a lot for your call, Dennis.
But you have some nice radishes.
Right, right. There's always a silver lining, isn't
yes.
there? All right. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is from Derek. I've had a few wisteria vines in the ground for 3 years, and they've never flowered, except for when they were first planted from the nursery. How can I get them to flower?
Well, first of all, they're a different type of wisteria. There are the Japanese type, which are very showy. You see these very commonly in the south and southeast. But they're not very reliable for Iowa, and they very seldom bloom. The ones that do best in Iowa are the American types, and they're perfectly hardy. Now, when you plant those, they may not bloom for 2 or 3 years until they get big enough to bloom, but eventually they should. They need a very sturdy structure because they get to be quite heavy. But if you have an American type and it's been in the ground for 2 or 3 years, then I would expect to see some blooms eventually.
All right. This one is from Mauro. He says he's wondering if you have any suggestions for deer repellents. He says that there are deer migrating from a park into his large vegetable garden on the east side of Iowa City. Last year, they destroyed all of the pepper and the eggplants. And he says someone told him that human urine would help. Any other options? Or does that work?
Well, people use various things. There are your commercial products that you can buy in garden centers. Sometimes they work. Oftentimes they don't. There are various objects that people use to discourage them, like fragrant bars of soap, human hair, fox urine, various things that people try. And again, sometimes they work, oftentimes they don't. So it all comes back to basically fencing. It's unfortunate because in many cases you're dealing with deer that are kind of accustomed to humans and to various sounds and various smells. And it's very hard to discourage them when they've grown accustomed to that. So it comes back to either a tall wire fence or an electric fence, oftentimes, unfortunately.
All right, back to the phones. Next up is Tina. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I have about 12 knockout roses, and usually by this time of year, they're showing signs of coming back, and I don't see any green coming up on the branches or any signs of leaves anywhere. Should I give up or should I wait a few more weeks?
They took a really big hit too. The ones that I have seen on campus in Ames, you have these 3, 3.5, 4 foot tall canes, and for the vast majority of that cane is dead. Now, the ones that I have seen mostly, there is some growth at the very base, and so those plants can recover. But if you see nothing at all,
By now, I've seen them coming back, but I know it's been cold.
So if you see nothing at all is coming up from the bottom of the cane at all, it's basically totally dead down to the ground, then I think you've lost them, unfortunately. So that can happen too, but most of the ones that I have seen, the bottom, let's say maybe 3 or 4 inches of the canes are still alive, the rest is basically dead.
Wow. Tina, thanks a lot for your call. And is this something that we're just seeing so much of this winter because it was such an incredibly harsh year?
Yes. I think a number of things are actually going on. We had the very cold air temperatures. We had the ground where I think in many cases the soil temperatures got very, very cold too. And so you have the very cold air temperatures, cold soil temperatures, the length of the winter. It was very hard for a lot of plants.
Some of the things that we find ourselves talking about seem to be things that we don't normally have trouble with in the winter. Roses, obviously you have to do some things to get them through the winter, but usually roses are hardy. Aren't boxwoods usually hardy as well?
Well, boxwoods are kind of a finicky plant. They're not my favorite because this thing, winter injury is something that occurs periodically on the boxwoods. I think choosing the right site is very important for the boxwoods because you don't want to put them in a open, exposed site. I typically prefer on boxwoods an eastern exposure where they have a certain amount of winter protection, and a south or western exposure typically is much more open, much more likely to see winter damage. So I would choose a good site. And if we have, for example, a dry summer like we did last year, maybe watering those plants a few times in the fall to make sure they have a chance to absorb water before the ground does freeze. And I think those two things would help. But the site, I think, is very important, not to put these in windy, exposed, maybe western or southern exposures.
With the people who've lost roses this year, do you recommend just replanting and trying again?
I would, yes. The knockouts typically are pretty darn reliable, but this is the coldest winter in 25 years, mm-hmm. So you're going to lose a few things. So, and what I would do with the knockouts is in the fall of the year, I would take some soil and basically cover the bottom 4 or 5 inches of the rose canes just so they have a little bit of extra protection. They normally don't need that, but that's kind of insurance.
All right. Well, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. It is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Linda Nave, who's Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you can join our conversation with your questions for Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Richard Duran and Linda Nave. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And this one's from Ben in Des Moines. I have two butterfly bushes that I pruned to about 1 foot high in late winter. So far, they've shown no signs of life. They've come back before, but I had not pruned before and just allowed the winter to kill off the top of the bush. However, a warm winter in the past didn't make them smaller at all, and I wound up with giant bushes. So to prevent that huge bush I pruned this year, when do I know they've reached negative ornamental value and should be replaced and sent to the compost pile?
Well, the question is, are they dead or alive? And I think after this winter, they possibly could be dead. If you see no sign of life by early June, I would pronounce them dead.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Hank is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Hank.
Yes, hello. I have a question. I got a kind of a horse U-shaped retaining wall that goes into the house, and the only side that's open on it is to the north. And I've planted that fine fescue grass, which grows, and I cut it about twice a year with the weed whacker. And I was wondering about planting ferns in there.
Okay. That would be a possibility. Sure. Things like ostrich fern, which is very, very easy to grow. It spreads by itself. Very reliable would be a possibility.
Ostrich is like the bird?
Right, ostrich fern. It's actually native to Iowa, a very common plant, typically found around older homes in urban settings, very common.
Okay. And is there any kind of a vine that would grow there? I planted those goofy hummingbird vines. I had to kill them things off. But is there a vine that would grow on that retaining wall?
Well, possibly you could. You could try growing, for example, Virginia creeper, which is a native vine. It has on its stems, it has like suction cups, so it can stick to the surface of various objects, and so it can climb a wall. So you could try that. It turns kind of reddish in the fall as far as the foliage, but it's a native vine, very vigorous, very easy to grow.
All right, Hank, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Dave and Spencer. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Last summer, midsummer, I planted some clumps of a warm season grass. I think it's blue grama, and I had it in a fairly protected spot and watered it, and it got a lot of snow. But I don't see any sign of life. How long should I go before I give up on that grass?
Probably, let's say, mid-June. That plant likes warm weather. So far, it hasn't gotten too much of that, so it still might green back up. So I would wait a few more weeks. If you don't see anything by mid-June, you probably lost it.
Okay. I have one comment on deer. Last spring, I had, some two-year-old raspberries that had a lot of new growth on them, and the deer just loved that new growth, even as spiny as it was and thorny. I couldn't believe it.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Joe in Cedar Falls. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have some steeply forested land in northeast Iowa that we have these vines that all you see in all the forests. Some of them are quite large, 6-7 inches in diameter. They drive me nuts. You know, they go up and practically pull down trees. If I cut those off at the base, is that going to kill them and take care of that, or will they just come back with more?
Okay. I think most of your woody vines would simply resprout, so that would probably not kill them. If you wanted to kill them, one way of doing that would be to apply Roundup directly to the cut surface. That should kill them. But cutting them off, probably not.
Okay. Any other advice as far as how to deal with those vines?
You could simply tolerate their presence. But if you want to get rid of them, I think you're going to have to possibly use a herbicide.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Sheila in Des Moines. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. I want to do some container gardening this year. And do I use garden soil, potting soil, or do I make my own concoction of soil?
That's a really good question, because the tendency is to just dig up garden soil, because if your crops grow, you know, you have a good garden, you just use that soil. Problem is it loses its structure and its moisture and nutrient capabilities within the container. So I would suggest using a good potting soil, a loose potting soil, one that drains well. I find, personally, you get what you pay for with potting soils. If you pay a little more,
right,
you get a little better product. That's sort of the rule of thumb you go with. But definitely use a potting soil mix. Now, sometimes
okay,
a gardener will mix a potting soil mix with garden compost, mix it up thoroughly. That works fairly well. You might introduce a few weed seeds to your container at that time. But overall, if you're doing a few containers, the potting soil, you can't beat it.
All right, Sheila, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Marlon is on the line in Garrison. Hi, Marlon.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
We have some asparagus growing in a ditch, and it tastes good if we get it right away, but inevitably a lot of it comes up very woody, very, you know, as much as 3/4 of an inch across, even when it's only 2 or 3 inches tall. Is there any way to make it all come up, the nice, fine stemmed variety?
Not really, no. No, what you get is what you get. So there's really no way to make it, let's say, a better quality stalk, no.
So is the asparagus that we see growing in rural ditches, mm-hmm, is that the same as the asparagus that we grow in our gardens?
Basically, it is. Basically, what birds have done, they have eaten some of the fruits on the female plants, and they have deposited the seed in various locations. They come up from seed. And it's basically escapees from the garden, essentially.
All right. Yeah. If the asparagus in our garden would grow half as well as the asparagus in our ditch, we would be
right,
so thrilled. But at least we have the ditch asparagus. Marlon, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Chris is on the line in Perry. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
We have a wet soil in a shaded area, and my wife and I would like to put up an ornamental tree. I'd like to know whether it would survive back there.
A wet soil.
Yes, wet.
And what size tree were you looking for, possibly?
Nothing large, 25 feet or so, 30 maybe.
Trying to think.
She's not a fan of the willows.
No, I'm not either. They're weak-wooded, they're very prone to breakage, so probably not that. I'm thinking still.
I think this is a difficult question.
Well, wet soil. And the size is the other thing. As far as a small tree, there are some nice big trees that do well, mm-hmm, like river.
How big are we talking here? Like oak tree big?
Well, we're talking like 40, 50 feet. I'm thinking things like river birch.
Yes.
Okay. Does just fine there. I'm thinking bald cypress, which is a really neat plant.
What's it called again?
A bald cypress.
Bald cypress, okay.
Bald cypress. That is a deciduous conifer. Most conifers retain their foliage in the wintertime. This one does not. It drops its leaves. It has a very nice appearance. It's kind of conical. But it's basically native to swampy, wet areas. It just loves the moisture, so no problem at all. So
yeah, we have a very wet soil.
Yeah, so that is a nice plant. Eventually gets to be 40, 50 feet tall, but you might want to consider that. Bald cypress would be a nice one, I think. We have some on campus here at Iowa State.
And at Ryman Gardens.
And at Ryman Gardens, and they look really nice. So.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your question. Next up, we've got Pat in Windsor Heights. Hi, Pat. Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, we planted a red maple. It was bare root, and I think it was last fall, and it leafed out beautifully. It was about 4 feet tall. This year, it's leafed out again quite nicely, but only the first foot. And I'm wondering, I guess this means the top 3 feet are gone, or what I should do about that.
Yeah, the top portion probably is dead, and again, probably due to the winter weather. You basically have two options. One would be to take the time and try to develop this into a nice tree again, which it could happen, or simply replace it with another tree. If you want to keep the tree, I would basically wait a few more weeks. If the top doesn't leaf out, then prune it back to where you have some live growth. And what I would do is allow maybe two or three of the uppermost sprouts, let them grow this summer. And then next year, go out there as they begin to leaf out and select what you think is the best sprout. And then remove all the other ones. So now you have hopefully a new leader. Cut it back to that point if you need to, and hopefully it's going to be okay. But it's kind of risky. It may develop into a good tree, maybe not.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Pat. And another email question. This one is from Susan in Jewel. I'm about to plant two long-stem rose bushes, and I'd like any input I can get. I've never planted roses, and I'm not sure what the steps are. Also, this winter, how do I winterize them?
Well, the key question would be, are they like a hybrid tea, one of the modern roses?
Well, she says one is a dark pink flowered rose bush called Proud Land Rose.
I don't recognize that name. Well, let's assume they are a hybrid tea. And if they're a hybrid tea or a grandiflora, those are grafted or budded. And you can tell where they were grafted because there's a knob in the stem where they were grafted.
Okay.
So when you plant like a hybrid tea or a grandiflora, you want to plant that graft union below the ground by 2 or 3 inches because that's the most sensitive plant part of the plant. And if we don't plant it that way and we have a cold winter, it's going to die back to that graft union. We're going to lose the plant. So make sure that graft union is below the ground by 2 or 3 inches. Then make sure they have a well-drained soil, at least 6 hours of direct sun. And in the fall of the year, I would mound around 10 or 12 inches of soil around the base of the plant, covering the bottom foot or so of the canes with soil.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Rick is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have some yews. They're in the form of a shrub. They survived the winter okay, but they have a lot of brown on them. They still have some green.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what I could do to improve their green looks.
Well, again, the browning is due to the winter injury. They suffered some winter injury too. They are beginning to break bud and put on some new growth. So again, I'd probably wait another week or two, and those areas that are basically not greening back up, prune those areas out.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Next up, Angie in Ankeny. Hi, Angie.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Good. Well, last year I had 15 pots of petunias in my front backyard, and they were completely wiped out by budworm. Now, I was going to go ahead and replace all the dirt in these pots because I know those little the moths or whatever lay the eggs in the soil. But I'm wondering if it was cold enough this winter that all those eggs would have been destroyed, because replacing the soil in 15 pots is a big job.
It's difficult to do. What do you think killed the petunias, by the way?
Budworm. Tobacco worm, little green worms.
Well.
I saw them eating them.
Okay.
Did they have a little horn on the back of them?
No.
No. They weren't a hornworm then, because they're not little.
No, It's similar. They are little. It's similar to a hornworm. But what I saw online, and it was a budworm, which is pretty typical. They wipe out petunias. And okay. I read that they pupate. They go into the soil and lay eggs. And I was just wondering if maybe I could benefit from that horrible cold we had and that it might have destroyed those eggs.
Probably not, unfortunately. I'm not sure exactly what kind of insect it was, but I think our entomologist indicates that the cold temperatures probably were not cold enough to kill most insects, so I doubt that it would. But on the other hand, if you had petunias in there last year, I'd go with something different this year, maybe geraniums or marigolds or zinnias, salvia possibly. I'd try something different, and if the insects come back, I would probably use some insecticides to control that.
All right, Angie, thanks a lot for your call. Greg is on the line next from the Quad Cities. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Have a snow crab about 40 years old in the front of a house. Took a lot of dead wood out of it last spring. Took a lot out this spring, or actually last fall. Took a lot out this spring. I think basically pruning it up maybe too much in the fall really hurt it through the cold winter. I had it trimmed again. It's budding out, and the leaves are very small. Have I lost that snow crab? And the other issue, and should I just have it taken out? And the other issue is I have a purple ash, and is there anything to spray the purple ash with for the emerald ash borer? That's my question.
Okay. Thanks. Well, as far as the crabapple tree is concerned, there are some disturbing trends there where you're seeing dieback and small leaves. Those are signs of a very weak or very a tree in poor health. And so if that trend continues, I would assume it's irreversible and the tree will eventually die. As far as the ash, there are some insecticides you can use as far as the emerald ash borer, but our standard recommendation is that you don't really treat unless the insect has been found within 15 miles of your location. That's important. If they're not there, you simply don't treat. You don't need to.
Greg is in the Quad Cities, so that probably means
close by, but not yet found in Scott County.
All right. Greg, thank you so much for your call, and we are out of time. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave, thank you.
Thank you.
Linda Nave is Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program. And, of course, we'll be back with Hort Day again next Friday. Coming up at noon today, it's River to River with Ben Kiefer. What's on the show today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. This week, President Obama awarded the Medal of Honor to former Army Sergeant Kyle White for his courage during a battle in 2007 in Afghanistan. This hour, we'll talk with veteran Kane Schilling of Palo, Iowa. He owes his life to White, and he was in that battle, in that ambush. He'll recount that. We have half a dozen other items we'll get to in our News Buzz edition of River to River as well, Charity.
All right, coming up today at noon, this is Talk of Iowa. Coming up Monday on the show, we'll explore the country at 2 miles an hour. This is Talk of Iowa.